Welcome everyone, we're about to begin Beth Hashem BPJ share number 145. That's by Spimi joint share number 125. There is an author called Amy Morin. She wrote a book called 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do, which Be'ezes Hashem we're going to give shiurim on. Not sure which series yet we're going to do this in, but it's so important in life that we will either do this on Sunday Shiurim or Friday Shiurim or part of Life Transforming Advice series, not sure yet, and incorporate, of course, the Torah perspective on all of that. But over here in the joint share for marriage, we're going to go through another book that she wrote called The 13 Things Mentally Strong Couples Don't Do, which is about fixing what's broken and develop healthier patterns and grow stronger together. And we're going to go straight at it. The first thing that they do is they do not ignore their problems. There's a survey that was brought out that 47% of people don't bring up problems with their spouse because they fear they'll make things worse. So we'll talk about it now, first with an anecdote that she brought up over here, which is very important. The first thing I want to say before we start this particular one out of the 13 things that couples don't do, meaning they don't ignore their problems, is that that does not mean that you constantly bring up these issues that should be overlooked and they're no big deal. It's part of regular life and you need to just not focus on it. Or the idea of being mevater, you know, which is a very beautiful midah. To overlook things and don't sweat the small stuff, like they say, and, you know, don't make a big deal out of things and downplay things and have a munah b'tachin and ride the storms, and all of that is 100% true. But nevertheless, there's certain problems that are ongoing or that are not going away or that are definitely things that need to be addressed, certain needs that are not being met, certain disagreements that needs to be worked on that are just buried under the rug that needs to be brought out. And you need to, of course, daven for siyata d'shmaya to help it be brought out the right way and then figure out how to bring it out the right way. So she brings an example here. We're going to mention the names here of this anecdote. There's Angela and her husband. She has a husband, Carl. Angela was already, they're already more middle-aged and their kids are already out of the house. And she goes into the office, Angela, and tells her, the author, Amy Morin, that I think I have empty nest syndrome. And she arrived early to her appointment because she felt lonely and she wanted to be around people. She was a stay-at-home parent for 25 years for her three sons. And now that her sons moved out, she knows she did her job well. She raised them to be independent young men. They do things on their own. They're thriving. And they all have jobs. And the youngest one is in college. And she felt no one needed her anymore. So she's not going to ignore her relationship problem. What's her relationship problem? She was married to her husband, Carl, for over 30 years. And his job was earning the money. And my job was managing the home. And we ran our lives like two separate businesses. And now he still had that job because he still was working. But she felt a lack of sense of purpose because her job to manage a home is not there anymore. And she acknowledged we didn't have much in common outside the kids. They spend the last two decades attending their son's sports events and after school activities. And they never did things together that didn't involve their sons. So the author asked this Angela, what did you want to gain from therapy? And she said, I want an emotional connection with my husband, Carl. And I wouldn't be experiencing empty nest syndrome if he and I had a better relationship. And when she asked if Carl shared her concerns, you know what she said? I have no idea. We never talked about it. We never talked about it. By the way, this is a big yisoy that people are married for 2 years, 5 years, decades. And sometimes real problems they never talk about, which is a problem. You know, she explained he wasn't the type to hold deep, serious conversations. And she felt that if she brought to him, you know, that he felt distant, she felt distant from him and so on, he'll roll his eyes, minimize the situation. And she says, if I told him we were going out on a date night, he'll probably think that's a corny, or, you know, he'll just, or I just read it by some woman's magazine. And he was sure, she was sure that Carl wouldn't attend couples therapy with her, so she didn't even ask. And she says, you know, I want to enjoy this new phase in my life. And the best way was probably to put more energy in making the best marriage that I can. In other words, what was happening was like this, and it's sad and it happens a lot, unfortunately, in our Jewish world as well. And that is that she felt lonely for decades. Now, in the past, the kids distracted her from her pain. Yes, she had some friends, extended family, but the close connection with her husband, Carl, was missing. She didn't want to bring it up to Carl because he may feel, oh, you're being just dramatic. So you see here that children distract from the pain of a lonely marriage. And that's not a healthy thing. You know, they didn't really fight overall. They had great kids. They were financially secure. But they connected less often. And now there's an emotional distance between them. And she wants to tackle it head on. And this Amy Morin says something fascinating, that she worked with many people that do this. They ignore the problem in their relationship. And they look the other way despite that. This is an obvious problem that's affecting their partner. So couples like this, Angela and Carl, can't pinpoint the single issue in time, what changed it, but it's a shift over time. So like I said before in the beginning, and I'm going to reiterate it now, this idea of vitter, of overlooking, yes, this idea of limud zchus, giving the benefit of the doubt, and to always see the good points of your spouse. That's a foundation of the foundations. But nevertheless, when there's important things that need to be worked through together, they have to work through it together with a pleasantness and a respect, but even talking about things that are difficult. So here are certain statements about how some people view relationships, which we have to learn how to overcome. So for example, they may say, a couple or one of them, we rarely discuss big issues in our relationship. Or we argue over small things but don't discuss the underlying problem. Or we talk to people outside of the relationship about our problems, but we don't talk to each other about our problems. Or our problems are evident to our friends and family, but we don't discuss it with each other. And we'd rather look the other way than acknowledge what's happening with us. And we don't work together to address our individual problems with one another. And we share some individual habits, but we never talk about them, like the fact that we both eat unhealthy, we both are not so good with money, and we need to budget. We don't discuss this. And we sometimes, address a problem in a roundabout way. You know, you leave a bill on the table for the other one to see it without talking about it, something like that. So or we make it one person's responsibility to address that issue. Oh, that's my husband's job or my wife's job to discuss finances or other issues. So we don't talk about the problems. So some problems come up suddenly. You know, someone gets Chalila laid off. And, you know, so you have to tackle that problem right away. So you'll tackle it. But other issues evolve slowly, like this story with Angela and Carl, where their focus on their children over years and decades caused them to not emotionally bond. That took a course over a long period of time. So it never occurred to them, Angela said, it never occurred that Carl and I should go out for dinner for ourselves sometimes and sometimes without them. And they barely had anything to talk about, and they retreated into their separate rooms in the house. And deep down, she knew it was about that sign, but she didn't want to do anything about it. That's how very often we forget about our marriages slowly. We need to put a stop to that. We dance around the problem. We skirt around the problem. We ignore crises until it reaches a boiling point when the problem can't be ignored anymore, and then everything explodes. Everyone has problems. We need to realize this. Everyone has problems. There's no crime in having problems. That's what life is. When you enter any relationship, you're going to have problems. Even your individual impact on one another is normal. Your work stress could affect your spouse. Your student loans could affect things. Your moods, your mental health could affect things, and so on and so forth. So that's the idea. There's spiritual differences, there's other differences, and so on and so forth. So here's an example of various problems that people ignore. And again, this does not mean you bring up every minor issue all the time. You don't make a whole conference meeting because your spouse left their socks or underwear on the floor, you know. You won't have the energy to tackle the bigger problems if you constantly deal with these small things that need to be overlooked anyway. You could address hurt feelings in a normal way. So here are things that common things that couples ignore. Being in debt or struggling to pay bills, or a disagreement about parenting issues or in-laws issues, or disliking each other's friends or company that they're with, or sexual issues, or how they divide the labor in the house, or mental health issues, or the fact that they're not spending enough time, quality time together, or one is spending too much long hours at work, or even in the base medrash. And think a minute, do I avoid addressing these problems with my husband or wife? Do they avoid addressing it with me? Are we both ignoring problems? Now, in this case, with Angela and Carl, Angela didn't want to admit that she had a problem with Carl. And there were times she worried that they didn't have much in common and what would it be like when the boys leave. It was a nagging concern, but she pushed it off. She figured, we'll have plenty of time. Right now, we're busy with this, with life, so there's no problem. But then it became later, and then she had to face the problem head on. And now she's uncomfortable. How am I going to point out with her husband, Carl, that we've grown apart, and she was afraid that the conversation would make things worse? I think a lot of us could relate to this. That's why I was marach over here a little bit, because I believe we all could relate to this. Time passes by, and then we hop, you know, we never really address these things. So if you avoid these difficult conversations, you'll have a difficult relationship. The good news is when you acknowledge the situation now, first you acknowledge it to yourself, even if you don't yet have the courage to acknowledge it to your husband or wife yet. But you could develop a plan for addressing the problem moving forward. That's a very, very important insight here. Ignoring problems makes sense in the short term because you keep the peace status quo. You don't have to bring it up for another couple of days or a year and so on. And addressing a problem we understand could be risky. Your husband or wife may get upset. They may still refuse to address the problem even though it was brought to light, you know, and may get worse before it gets better because you're touching upon a sore subject. But again, if you don't do this, it ends up blowing up. So you have to resonate with how to go about it. And we are going to be marach more about this, but we're just going to end off this share right now. Just asking yourself, do any of these problems ring true to you? For example, you say, you know, our problems crept up so slowly on us that we didn't even have a moment when we needed to address them. Or you believe your problems can't be solved. Or you believe that discussing a problem will lead to a massive blowout. Or you'd rather keep the peace than stir up these issues. Or my husband or wife refuses to talk. Or our problems are vague. Like we don't have fun together, but we can't pinpoint exactly what's off. Or I don't want to make things worse. Or we're not good problem solvers. Or I'm afraid that my husband or wife won't address the problem and I'll feel rejected by bringing it up. Or I don't want to bring it up to my wife or husband because they may not know that the problem exists or they may downplay it. Or I don't have energy to deal with this. Or I'd rather just solve problems on my own instead of getting my husband or wife involved. Or I don't dare bring up these issues. I'm afraid to bring up these issues. So all of these things are very, very important to know, to understand, and how we'll go about it. So in the case of Angela and Carl, like we mentioned over here, she didn't want to say directly to her husband, we have a huge problem here. Right? Because she thought of staying, we don't spend quality time together, it's too direct. She didn't want Carl to feel like she was blaming him, didn't want him to get defensive. So what happened here is she did something different. Instead of addressing directly the problem, she encouraged a solution within herself. This is very important. When you sometimes you could resolve a problem by not talking about the problem itself, but by taking action. So for example, over here, Angela decided to suggest to her Carl, let's do things together, various activities. She took charge. She bought a ticket to a play, as an example. She told Carl about the plan. He wasn't overly excited, but she suggested they go to his favorite restaurant before the play. He agreed, and they had they ended up having a lot more fun than they thought they had. She got encouraged by this. Then she asked Carl, would you be interested in a weekend getaway into the mountains? And he said yes. And she took charge of the planning. And he expressed interest in hiking and taking a bike tour to her delight. And during the weekend getaway, she made a point of how much she enjoyed the time together. And she said, I love that we're doing things together. And Carl agreed with her on that. Yes, it's nice. And then when they were hiking together, Carl started talking about things like how much he missed having the kids home and always wondered if he was a good father. And he never really talked about this stuff before. So in other words, this hiking and this initiation of his wife doing things together caused him to open up without addressing the problem directly. And then once they grew a little bit and they warmed up to each other, then she says, you know, I want to find fun things for us to explore and do together, and that we should keep having fun together, and we'll grow closer together. Then you could be more comfortable with opening up that way. And she doesn't feel that she's a lone empty nester anymore. So you see here in this case, she was able to address the problem without directly talking about it. It's not always possible to do that. So we're going to discuss more on how to go about it. But this is the idea, the aside of the first of the 13 things that mentally strong people, couples don't do, is they don't ignore their problems and their issues. And of course, tefillah is a big part of it also. When you're not sure how to address it, you ask Hashem for siyata d'shmaya. And we will continue Bezras Hashem on this particular aspect in the upcoming shiur. Bracha v'atzlacha.